You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA/SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back. Happy New Year from New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design live in the studio today. A crowd of folks, including Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Well, it is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On Thursday, January 5th, 2023. We're all getting used to that new date, right? Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Ron. And joining us today as well is Heidi Cartwright.
Good morning. It's great to be here in a new
Hold on
year.
There. There we go, Heidi.
Fantastic. Oh, here I am.
No, she's on. Yes, good. Was the mic working? RICP, Retirement Income Certified Professional, Managing Executive, Director of Operations. So many titles, so little time. Great to have you here, Heidi. Thank you for joining us. And as well, Deanne Jennings, our Director of Operations, back there in the chair.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. It's so good to be back.
It is great to be back. We're excited. Excited is probably a little bit understated because we also have joining us today our local CPA, Mr. John Sluice.
Thank you for having me.
Woo.
It's
Woo.
Great to have you.
It's always
great
fun hearing excited and CPA in the same sentence.
Oh, yes. You should see me in my day job.
Now, there is so many changes. Changes afoot. As Mr. Sherlock Holmes used to say.
Yes.
And so we are trying to address some of those changes today. But first, a thank you to all those for the nice comments we had for the Christmas show about Mr. John Skipton of Denneby Close from All Creatures Great and Small. Lots of really nice comments about that. Thank you. We love doing the Christmas show. Frankly, I like that story enough to where we might repeat it this coming year. So we'll see. But then also, the rebroadcast, we had a lot of questions, tax questions, because of that rebroadcast. And these tax questions really will take us into the other subjects as well. But it points up to me the basics of why we are all saving for something. We're saving for something. So that's why we talk about these things on a weekly basis. Because we're all, in essence, playing a game. Now, it's not like, of course, the game that U of M played against TCU.
Well, that's good.
We saw what can happen when a team is thrown off or they had too much time on the side or whatever. We all kind of, okay, what was it that caused them to lose? Now, everyone's kind of wondering, you know, what did happen to them? And others are saying, Dennis, I don't want to talk about that game anymore, thank you. You can just move on. Whatever your position is, we all know that they lost. That was a short-term loss. As Mr. Tom Brady says, it is a game after all. It's a game. And this is a long-term game. So we're playing this for the long term. And I even have Mr. John Sluice nodding his head in agreement with me, which doesn't always happen. So
usually not.
Given that reality, we're playing a long-term game. So what is the purpose of this money for you? It might be income in retirement. It might be income later, earlier. It might be the tax benefits and or passing it through the estate. It might be a mix for you. We're all trying to gain information to help us to learn how to play this game because many of these instruments that we're talking about that are part of this game can help us gain traction, where we might not otherwise or take advantage of current tax law and the plans that we might participate in.
Because when we're playing this game, the other player in the game, they get to change the rules when they want to, like they just have.
The word of the day. Great advice, because they are constantly changing the rules. How do we adjust and take advantage of those rule changes? Mm-hmm. Now, that takes us then into the next portion. If they're going to move the needle, how are we going to move our own needles so that we can take advantage of those? Now, but first, we want to answer these questions that were asked of Ron, and thank you, Ron, for forwarding these on to us, sir. By the way, well, welcome, Ron Jolly, to
sir.
Back after the holidays.
Sir, yes, sir.
You're here with us, too. So, here's the first question. A gentleman from Alpena. He says he's moved to Alpena 5 years ago. Thank you for the nice comments. Now I stream your show after we moved to Alpena 5 years ago. Always great advice. I'll circle that one. Thank you. Here's my question. I'm in the marketplace for insurance. I'll be 65 in October of 2023. My mother-in-law died in November, so obviously some opposing information here, something to keep in mind. But this is so emblematic, if you will, of the questions that and the concerns, the situations that people are involved with. We don't see this daily, but I'll say weekly, monthly anyway. How will we inherit be used? How will what we inherit be used as income? She has cash from a house sale, number one. So let's just address this right now, John.
Mm-hmm.
How is that included in income? She has cash from a house sale that she's passed on to us through the estate. What do you say to that, sir?
I say no, with some asterisks, because I'm an accountant and I could never say just straight no.
But generally, no.
Generally speaking, cash coming through an estate would not be taxable.
Not be taxable, because you get the stepped-up basis in almost every case, because the asset appreciated, it's been liquidated. As a part of the estate, you think.
Right. So the estate may have some tax, but to you, the beneficiary, it's coming to you, it would not be taxable.
Okay. Next, life insurance. Life insurance. So boring, really, but can really be significant in an estate. Always remember this as part of the estate. Oh, yeah. The face value is a part of the estate, first of all. But how is that taxable, John?
Well, life insurance is one of those where I get to really say it depends. A lot of individuals will assume that life insurance is not taxable. And normally that is the case, but there are parts of them that are, and there are a lot of nuances, and this can have a lot of tricky difficulties that come in there where if you didn't dot your I's and cross your T's, that it really can get messy very quickly.
Depends on who the beneficiaries are and how it was owned.
Correct. And what type, whole life versus term, and was it what type? So this, you said life insurance. So life insurance is also different than, there's different kinds of insurances that could be coming through here as well. So you got to be careful. So life insurance specifically.
But in most cases, life insurance, the face value, the face amount is not taxable. In almost every case, not taxable. What? All that, you know, they paid in all those premiums? The life insurance face amount, in most cases, no tax. Okay. Next, an IRA. An IRA.
Depends on the nature. If it was a Roth IRA, not taxable, traditional IRA is going to have to stretch it over. It's going to be income to the beneficiaries.
Well, it's going to have to be stretched regardless. Mm-hmm. You have the option to stretch it mm-hmm. Over a 10-year period as mm-hmm. a non-spouse beneficiary. Mm-hmm. So the caveat there. But in most cases, that it tax if the beneficiaries have been properly named.
If the beneficiary, there is a key.
And primary that actually gets, beneficiaries, did you change that primary beneficiary, in this case, possibly from a previous spouse to the children next? Yes?
Yes.
And have you named them all? Are you all named as beneficiaries? Mm-hmm. So that's a huge caveat, right?
Mm-hmm. And not in this question, but I oftentimes see this shifting around as well. So afterwards, maybe they forgot to name one of the beneficiaries. So you're now giving it, it's in your name, but someone else, and you're like, well, I'm supposed, the trust says this, or the documents say that there's five people, but the beneficiaries were only four. So now I'm going to have to shift around outside. So that's outside of what we're talking about here as well. But
now, as a part of this, which we didn't state, because we're only talking about the facts here in this case. There's always, I wrote this down, the noise of the loss, if you will, the mourning that goes with the loss. So it was reminded to me as we were talking about this outside in the lobby here, the loss, the pain that goes for as a part of this for individuals trying to think properly, because we have all the others involved. We have the family members. We have that difficulty of managing and maneuvering this. So as a part of this, it always includes it's almost like working through a fog. You will be, in most cases, you will not have the same brain power, if you will, to work through this. That points up the need for counsel as well. Having people that you know and trust that can help you maneuver and walk through these things is critical as a part of it, I would say,
right.
too.
And Dennis, what you're talking about here is right on and astute in the sense that there are a lot of things that are going into this, the house sale, the life insurance, the IRA, mm-hmm. the annuity. And then even further, that's not even addressing the main question that they asked here, which was, how does this impact my marketplace insurance, which now comes into income taxes. And so there's a lot of complexity here. But what this is getting to is the idea that one particular event caused many ripple impacts mm-hmm. and ripple effects on various different things. Many of these were not taxable, so they may not have a direct impact, but it may have some indirect impacts. Some are going to be impacted. But
yes.
when you do the IRA versus the annuity versus life insurance, so that all is going to interplay, especially when you start talking about the marketplace, Irma, and other things.
So this guy turned 65 November of this year, 23, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you're saying he has to go to the marketplace to buy insurance until he can get Medicare?
That's went into the very specific things on the estate side of things. This his question is asking about insurance, which is from the market. He's likely going to the marketplace from January through September, and then in October, I'm assuming he would start taking Medicare. You can always elect out of Medicare, but
they judge your rates based on your income then,
right?
Yeah,
correct.
It's interesting, isn't it?
And it's also the premiums. So if you're on the marketplace, the premiums are going to go up. And he's asking, are you going to give it back because it's a premium tax credit? And that's actually different this year in 2022 and 21 than it's going to be going forward, because it gives some exemptions of what qualifies for if the income is different than it is what you planned on. So.
Wow, this is so easy to understand, John.
Yeah, we've all got it. Yeah, we're all right there. And can you imagine listening on the radio?
What did he say? I don't know.
One other thing on this specific question specific too is that he's asking about the health insurance. And I'm going to mention, okay, there's two parts of it. There's the income premium that plays into it. There's also the subsidy or the decrease in your deductibles that also interplays as well. So when you're answering these questions, you got to factor all of those in.
The last part of this is the annuity. Last asset is a part of this. I mean, and this is so a part of, it seems to me, many estate planning conversations when someone has passed away. So the annuity's next. What do you say to that, John?
The annuity in general is going to be taxed, except if you named the beneficiary incorrectly. So here's my asterisks as well. So, I mean, there's lots and lots of asterisks, but in general, the annuity will be taxed.
Okay. In this case, the financial advisor adds in some caveats to that. What about the cost basis? Let's say she had paid $50,000 mm-hmm. for this annuity. That's what she originally put in. Mm-hmm. It's a non-qualified annuity, and it's now worth $100,000. What do we say then, John?
Then you have to factor in, and it's not entirely taxable because
you get
to deduct the basis.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And what I think is interesting with this discussion as well is because we're talking about the inheritance, but then going back to the question about the medical expenses, you have to factor in your own personal situation. Now you have this inheritance situation, and how does that affect what you're currently doing, and do you need to switch lanes on your current personal stuff because you've had this inheritance?
Right.
So this puzzle that you have to put together can become quite complex.
And that gets back to the noise that, Dennis, that you were referring to, is that it's hard. And these are the cases where you do have to stop and say, okay, I need to let someone else take a look at this, because mm-hmm. you're impacting things that are outside of your control, because we're talking about an estate, so there may be other beneficiaries, there may be mm-hmm. other things that are in place. And then on top of that, it's going to impact what you've done and you've planned on the marketplace that you set up last October or right. November, which is different now that makes you have this information.
To me, it's like, okay, you've been playing in the minors. I'll just keep this personal, you know. I've been playing in the minors, and all of a sudden now I'm swinging the bat in the majors. It's a different game. Mm-hmm. It's a different game. And so you may not be as comfortable. There may be reasons why you want to seek advice. And frankly, a one-hour conversation may save you thousands of dollars mm-hmm. just by knowing. Oh, it may also save you incredible amounts of angst. Oh, I thought all this thing was taxable, and you're telling me now most of it may not be taxable? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Huge difference.
Yeah,
so all of a sudden, the stress of all this can dissipate because you are now, in most cases, a fiduciary. Mm-hmm. You're not only looking after your own good or own means, you're looking after the means and goods of others who are involved in this estate. So Sister Joan, Brother John, you know, whomever we may be discussing or thinking about, the people that we know and love but don't necessarily want to be in business with, all of a sudden we are in both of those cases. Now all of a sudden we're in essence business with them, even for a short term time.
Yep. Yep. And this is a great example of it, because on face value you worried that there's going to be a lot of income. Or there could be none, right? If we look at this house sale, none. Life insurance could be none. IRA could be stretched, and an annuity might be, have a loss, and therefore there's no tax implication. None at all. Or it could be significant. We don't know those. And so there are a lot that could go into this.
So I speak rather from personal experience, having settled my own parents' estate. You know, I know and knew and loved my siblings and all the rest, but all of a sudden I had to take those blinders off in terms of having to be in business with them, and that was a new experience.
You learn a plethora of information you hope to never have to use.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm hearing from you guys is that it's just so important during a life change event, which a mother dying, passing away, or whatever, to go seek an expert's advice.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Because it, obviously we know, and we've talked about this before, it's not just your siblings you're now in business with, just to put another fine point on it. It's their spouses and or significant yeah. others.
Mm-hmm. And this is a good lead into the next question that was asked, and it's going to refer to this, but it says, my brother and I sold our home almost 2 years ago. We sold it for $100,000 plus over our purchase price. We were there for 2 years, but we're curious if there are other taxes. And why I said there's a segue on this is because that question, without even knowing they're asking this, is leading to the fact of unintended consequences. So you asked about income tax ramifications, and there are that. But you also asked, are there other taxes? And this gets back to, again, going back to the other
sure.
question. There's a lot of unintended consequences of that other estate. This one here as well. So
my brother and I sold our home almost 2 years ago. We sold it for $100,000 over our purchase price. So what are those? That's the next question again. I just wanted to make sure people were with us.
Yep.
What are you saying are the other implications, John?
So before we get into the federal income tax, which is what most people assume when they're thinking of asking a tax question, he's also talking about other taxes. So other taxes that could play into it is there could be an impact on the state. So some states follow what the federal does. Mm-hmm. Other states don't. So Michigan follows what the federal does sometimes, because there's also the Michigan household resources. So depending on your income level, that's the sale of a primary residence is not exempt on the Michigan household test, which then could preclude you from getting some of the homestead property tax credits that you might typically get. So there's an indirect impact there.
Mm-hmm.
Net investment tax potentially has an impact on this. There's the impact on Social Security potentially. And then there's also the impact of IRMA. And we all love IRMA.
Income-related Medicare adjustment.
Yeah, so that's where your Social Security or your Medicare that comes out of your Social Security, the Medicare premium, is technically based on your income. And so inside of that, it's a modified adjusted gross income, not adjusted gross income. And modified adjusted gross income can include some of these tax-free type of sales.
All right, next question.
That's before even getting into the federal side of things. And so
it can have implications, and you want to definitely sit with the tax professional on that situation. Now, next, last question. My father, age 89, took a portion of his savings and put it into a new CD account in my name and my sister's name. So it is not now part of his trust. When do we report this as income, number one, John? So he put a CD in their names. When do they report it as income?
I'm going to let you answer that question because you were so excited about this.
Yeah. I wrote never.
Ooh.
Never. Why? It's a gift. It's a gift he's made to them. Now,
and then
John
the accountant
caveats,
came through and said, with caveats, yes. But in general, gifts are not taxable to the beneficiary, the recipient.
So let's repeat that again. Say that again for our audience.
Gifts are generally not taxable to the recipient, nor are they deductible to the donor or the giver. So that's the key. Think of this as a gigantic scale that the IRS is just shifting, and as long as if one person takes income, another takes a deduction. If another person takes a deduction, another person takes income. So it's always up and down, and as long as it's level, it's okay. Where the IRS wins is when the income shifts to a higher tax bracket. But outside of that game, it's always a zero-sum game on income and losses. So for a gift, the donor or the giver does not get the deduction. Therefore, the recipient does not have income.
But what if that puts them in a higher income tax range?
Does not matter because it's not a taxable transaction.
Wow. It's not income. Daddy, did you know what I heard today on the radio? You can gift me $20,000 and it's not taxable.
You can gift $100,000 and it's not taxable. Now, the caveat on this, you can give $1 million and it's not taxable. What happens is it comes out of the individual giving the gift, the giftee, giftor. They have to file a tax return, potentially, if it's greater than the annual exclusion amounts. So currently that's $16,000. You have to file a return, but it's an informational return. It's not taxable. It's just a transaction that has to be reported because ultimately what they're doing is they're taking it away from the estate and gift annual or lifetime limitation.
Why this is so exciting, Ron.
Colleen and I have had a deal for years. If one of us hits it big on the lottery, we give the other 10%.
Yep.
So if I get the $900 million lottery, we get maybe $450 million afterwards. I get $350 million. I give her $25 million. That's not taxed for her. It's a gift. I give her $25 million.
Here's my asterisk.
That's too much. Yeah,
you won too much, Ron.
Yeah, the asterisks are that there's a lifetime limit. Currently, let's say it's let's just round with $12 million. Let's hypothetically say that. So let's pretend that you won a more reasonable number. Let's say you won $1 million and you gave $100,000 over. In that case, no, it would not be taxable. But now here's the kicker on it. It's not taxable to her. It is to you. So you take the $100,000 of income that you made the gambling or the lottery earnings. You don't get to deduct that $100,000 that you gave over. So the IRS is happy because they still got the $100,000 or $1 million of income. Did I answer that
question? He pays the tax on the income.
He pays the tax on the income.
It's gambling.
This is after-tax money. I got the money.
Yep.
I paid my taxes.
Paid your taxes.
Now with my net, I give her 10% of my net.
That is not tax. It's not a deduction to you and not income to her.
Okay. There you go. Mm-hmm. So that's a much clearer answer. Thank you, John.
Long as we're only talking about $1 million.
But if it's a much higher amount, then we're okay.
It could be taxable due to the estate tax.
Correct.
And that's when it gets a bit deeper.
Okay.
And estate taxes are very expensive, but that's only to the extent that it exceeds $12 million.
Currently,
that's the new number.
So the
last question is, as a part of this question, when do we report this as income at his death? I said no. When we withdraw, both of those questions are also no as well, because it is a gift, and in most cases, not taxable.
Can I add my stars?
He can add his
stars. So generally not taxable. He mentioned a CD here. The earnings of the CD would be earned upon...
Of course, because it's his. He owns it now, and the taxes on the interest.
Earnings of it, not the principal part.
We did have one comment said Congress gave everyone born in 1951, the class of 1969, an early birthday present. No RMD in 23. True?
No.
Ah!
No RMDs. It simply means that there may have been an adjustment for them if they were born at the right time. If they're 73 as of 1-1 of 23, then they get to change that RMD. So they're in that case, it isn't at age 72. It's at age 73.
And I think what the pause there is leaning into is thank you to the Secure Act 2.0, some of these ages of the RMDs and some of what was the catch-up amounts has become much more complicated. And we're going to need small little matrix schedules or large matrix schedules just to determine it. So again, getting back to is really understand what your age is, where you are, and not what your neighbor in the coffee shop is saying, because it is so complicated. It has gotten, well, if you're born before this date and after this date and others, I was actually joking with you earlier today that if you're born in 1959, two of them qualify. Now, I think that's going to be corrected, but, you know, it's just full of fun facts that there are so many little gaps and nuances and breaks and otherwise that you just have to be really careful now.
Well, just to go back on that answer a bit, I said no, but it could be the case. So if you were born in, if you are, so that would keep make someone born in 1950. So if they were born in 1-1 of 1950 or later, that would make them, see, we're still trying to figure this out.
Right.
So that's the other caveat to this. You are 73 this year. You do have to take your RMD, but that is because you're turning 73 this year. If you're turning 72 this year, then in that case, you don't have to. So if you were born in 1-1 of 51, you don't have to take the RMD until next year. So I said no. Mm. In that case, that was incorrect. In some cases.
Yeah, yes. That's the in some cases. Again,
that's
I come back into the
headache,
you got to be very careful when you read and you the articles because they might be dating at 1-1 versus you are 2-4. So look at your specific case because it is the brackets and the adjustments. And again, we're talking about RMD, but I'm going to focus a little bit more here now on the catch-up contributions that are there. The new age groups, it's now you got your first catch-up and your second catch-up and you've got the third catch-up. And I was joking beforehand that if you have a cat that walks across the street, you might have a fourth catch-up. Not really. But the point being there is that there's so many different levels and so many different what-ifs or scenarios that you really have to understand your particular situation and what it is for you and when you are based on your birthday, based on you, based on your specifics.
And in essence, there's some tax breaks in here that are going on. Yeah. There really are.
But I just think we should tell everybody, we've switched to another topic. There was recent legislation that was passed in that omnibus, I think that's how you say it, right? The omnibus bill. Mm-hmm. And that was passed like December 29th. So within that thousands and thousands of pages was what we are calling the Secure 2.0 Act of 2022. So some of the provisions that are included in this legislation is what we're talking about now. So one of those was the RMD age was changed, and now we're moving into what John was talking about. The catch-up limits for people, those are the amounts that extra amounts you can contribute to a retirement plan if you're over the age of 50. So that's what we're talking about now. So I'm going to let John go back to what he wanted to bring up on the catch-up contributions.
So we're having a conversation behind the scenes with Heidi. When did that pass? Well, it passed on the 23rd. It was signed in by Biden on the 29th.
So you've got three different dates.
It
was passed by the House,
weeks.
Then the Senate, and then approved by Biden.
But sorry. I just wanted to make clear to everybody that now we're switched to new rules that are coming out, and we are just reading through them for the first time in these first few days of the new year. And so we're just trying to make people aware of some of the changes that are coming down the pikeway for us.
So we're going to be attending the EdSlot course here in April.
April.
Is it Heidi?
Yeah.
Well, I know that that'll be the majority of the conversations, but it's also bringing to mind that if possible, we probably ought to try to have Ed on in the next couple months where we can talk about this more fully as well, especially in related to retirement accounts, because that's where the big game is. The big game is in the retirement accounts in most cases.
And I think, you know, that I fully agree that you're going to want to have those on and think through them. But this is where the practicality of certain things come in play as well, mm-hmm. where we can sit here talking and say, oh, well, we have to digest it and we have to hear it. But, oh, by the way, payroll starts on Friday. Hmm. And so you're going to have to be thinking about changes here.
That's
that
right.
It's changing. It's impacting. So your contribution limits can go up. What you put into whether you're going to choose to do a simple or whether you're going to choose to do what the type and nature may change now. So you're going to want to maybe modify that, which we can do in April or May when we understand it. But, oh, by the way, that's been 5 months have already passed. So there's a lot of things that are going to have to happen sooner than we think related to this. It is actually a fairly major thing that did get passed.
Oh, so tax laws have become more expansive. Rather, the rates have become more expansive at 12%. The income amounts that you can pay at 12% expanded. So in essence, what that means is that's a tax cut for, well, for anyone above the 12% bracket. That bracket expanded. That simply means that you're going to pay a lower tax for anyone in a higher bracket. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay lower taxes at those lower rates of income.
Mm-hmm.
See? There we go. Dennis finally gets one right. Next, after tax bracket changes, the contribution amounts, the amounts that you can actually contribute to those retirement accounts, has increased, and I just wrote the percentages here, 8.2%, 9.8%, 8.5%. 403B catch-up plans, 401K catch-up amounts. That simply means that if you're over the age of 50, you can
50.
Put more into these plans. Thank
Good
you.
Job,
yeah, excellent. I see that hand in the back. So, yeah, and the 457 catch-up, so the alphabet soup of retirement plans allows John, Jane, Dick, and Harry all to put more money into their accounts if they want to, and thus to possibly save more tax.
Yeah, saving taxes. And then it has expanded the tools that are available for us to utilize here. So
now what's interesting too is that some of these catch-up amounts and or the contributions that allow these catch-up amounts and the employers to catch up those amounts, they may have to, by law here, start making these what was previously tax-deductible contributions, turning them into Roth contributions.
Yeah. And if you want to get really political here, we're starting to ask the question of, it sure seems like this is pushing us in towards that is the privatization of the Social Security on a long, long-term basis and pushing it from the government into businesses through Roth and contributions.
Now, that's a shot out of left field.
I know. It was way out of left field.
Whoa, baby. Now, what are you talking about, John? Let's do we have a time before a break here? Because I want to hit the ceiling. It's getting all nervous.
No, what I'm getting at there is it was a shot out of
Thank
left
you, Ron,
field,
for the sound effects.
Was that this included a lot of changes into retirement plans, and it's really focusing on retirement plans, which have never been focused on before, because before it was Social Security. Nothing in here you saw about Social Security.
Right.
That stayed the same. And so what's really focusing in on the tools that are available, and it's becoming, in your mind then, it's to the financial advisors, it's to the individuals that would be the ones that would be more responsible. So they're incentivizing you to be aware of your own retirement, and Social Security has become a secondary in the primary. So it's a long-term shift. It's making it more in towards you're doing these for the retirement on your own.
Well, it's incentivizing people to be more responsible
Correct.
For themselves.
Correct.
But also, what does that mean? Larger sums in these plans,
Correct.
More tax. So some of this is revenue generation.
Right, it's revenue generating. That's what I was getting to. It's revenue generating as well.
For
That's,
the IRS.
Yep.
Surprise.
Hmm.
Well, that means that, well, the employers are going to have to wind up paying the tax. If it's not deductible for matching those contributions for the employee, the employer doesn't get to deduct it as an expense.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's the caveat.
Mm-hmm.
So employers are going to be thinking twice, well, do I want to make that extra contribution for the employees, given that it's not deductible? Well, yes, we will. But you're going to have to, you know, they're going to wind up paying, what, 20 to 30% more. As a part of that, having made that contribution for their employees. Wow. So.
Sorry, yes. I didn't tell you that beforehand.
No, that's okay. That's very interesting. That's great. So the contribution amount changes, and then next, you had also mentioned the Savers credit.
Yeah, I like that. I like the Savers credit. It's a retirement savings credit, if you will. It's one of those that no one really knows about. It's not used very often. Really, it's one of those credits that you probably shouldn't be getting in general, because if you get it, you probably aren't really saving. So it's a very low income-based credit that's available. Ultimately, what they tried to do on this inside of this act here is they simplified it. It was a very complicated credit. It has stepped in, phased in of 10%, then 20%, then 30%, then 50%, and various different scenarios and all this, and if then, and what there, and again, if the cat crossed across the street, whereas now it's much simpler and it's a 50%. But it's one that you should be thinking about. It incentivizes you, if you're lower income, that you should be receiving. Now, when I say that, everyone usually turns off their, turns off listening and says, oh, I'm not low income. I said, except maybe if you're just got done with your consulting job and you're 55 and you're still working and you're now making $15,000. Now you're still low income and you're using your savings. So low income doesn't necessarily have to mean destitute. Low income can be just that you currently have a low taxable income. And that means we got to think about tax planning. So.
And John, this is a delayed implementation, isn't it? This one doesn't
start. Yeah, that one doesn't start till like 2026. But yeah. It's still fun to talk about.
Yeah, and there's another.
Well, I just thought we should mention that.
There's another one that's
delayed.
Now, speaking of delays, we've got the RMD that increases to age 75 in what year, John? 2033.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I happen to know
and
that. Sorry.
Yes, that one phases in as well, or various different things. And
that
phases in, but it's meant to phase. So you got the 72, and then 73, and then 75. So they're stepping into.
In that case, anyone born before 1950 gets to extend, or rather, born after 1950 gets to extend their RMD date up to age 75.
What they didn't tell you behind that calculation is they're shifting their actuarial result to when you're going to die as well. That so the theory is that you're going to just have it for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and the tax, in essence, they're not as concerned about that because most likely the life expectancy ages will increase by that.
That's
time.
What I'm saying. They weren't being nice to you. They just make it so that's 75.
Facing reality. So before we get into the other tax questions and things we want to talk about, we have some tax-related information, too, from Deanne Jennings.
Absolutely. Well, this is kind of just a fun little clip or article that Heidi and I found. And we're talking about the Secure 2.0 Act, and we were discussing earlier as a group, why are there so many changes, or all these changes affect? Because the government needs more revenue in the Secure 2.0 Act. And so we found this article on the Road to Nowhere by Bill Gross, and I just wanted to go over that a little bit. I think it's important to recognize the dangerous levels of debt recently acknowledged by the Bank for International Settlements. Off-balance sheet dollar debt, they warned in a December 5th update, may remain out of sight, out of mind, but only until the next time dollar funding liquidity is squeezed. They calculate that this hidden shadow bank debt may be as high as $65 trillion, more than 2.5 times the size of the entire treasury market, and most of it's owed to the banks. So we're talking $65 trillion. It's hard to comprehend trillions of dollars, so let's just try to comprehend billions. And these are some fun facts. A billion seconds ago, the year was 1959. A billion minutes ago, Jesus was alive. A billion hours ago, our ancestors were living in the Stone Age. A billion days ago, no humans walked the earth on 2 feet. Currently, our federal government spends $1 billion every... Ron, what do you say?
Second.
Good guess.
That's awesome. Currently, the government spends $1 billion every 8 hours and 20 minutes.
So we can say that's safely amazing. Every day they spend about $3 billion, given 24 hours in a day.
Which quickly adds up to that trillion. They are spending too much money too fast. The U.S. debt to GDP ratio is currently about 122% versus 55% in the year 2000.
Now let me interrupt. That is a great marker. So in essence, it's easily twice what it was as a part of our overall total economic output. Twice what it was before. from 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. History has shown us that once a country's debt is larger than its GDP, economic growth slows down on a long-term basis. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so that is a warning shot across the bow in terms of the government's debt. It eventually will catch up with it in terms of interest that they have to pay on that debt. There we are right now. And or their ability to continue to pass these continuing resolutions of pushing that inevitable down the road, if you will.
Wait, you mean the government spend more money than it has?
Yeah.
And wait,
yeah.
You mean it's going to get
so much
where
more
is it
money
come
than
from?
It has? Yeah.
Increased taxes.
It's always increased taxes, but it's always a belief that it'll eventually get paid back that makes people willing to buy their debt. That's the next shoe that could fall at some point. And we never know when people begin to lose confidence, but that may be some of the initial information. As it gets disseminated, people begin to lose faith. Now, what's happening on the worldwide stage? That's why Putin and Xi from China are now trading with Saudi Arabia, not in dollars, but in their own currencies. That's a beginning sign of the waning of the power of the U.S. dollar on the world stage. It is slowly losing credibility on the world stage. Okay? And that happy thought, did we have... Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. That's not a fun one, right? But it is the reality mm-hmm. of that continuing overspending. People and the world begins to lose faith in the power of the U.S. dollar. As the dollar of... As the means of exchange, as the... A means of exchange for trade for around the world has been the dollar for a long time. Eventually, it will lose that power as the only means of exchange, which is currently happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Somebody texted, they believe the government pays $2 billion a day in interest. Wow. We don't know if that's the right amount, but they do pay a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it increased dramatically here because of this mm-hmm. rising interest rate and the fight, in essence, between the federal government and the Fed itself to tamp down interest rates, given their spending, making it very difficult for them to control it. Do we have any time left, Ron? We're out of time, are we not?
We're pretty much time to say goodbye, I guess.
All right. What you're saying there is that the government's overspending, and they're going to have to get it from somewhere, and so it's going to be in the taxes. And so a lot of these things here that came through in the Secure 2.0, it was beneficial, but it's also revenue-generating, too. And so really considering how it impacts you individually is important, because watching when and where and how you pay those taxes is very important.
Great final, John. Thank you so much for joining us today. John Sluice, CPA. It's great to be with you. Welcome back to 2023. Thank you, Ron.
John Sluice, CPA, Intrust, CPA 935-1590 or 1590.
Thank you, Ron.
Dennis Prout, thank you, sir. Deanne Jennings in the back
row. Thank you, Ron.
And Heidi Cartwright hiding out behind the computer monitors. Thank you all, and Happy New Year.
Thanks, Ron.